Hey, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Saket Mehra, partner with BDO India. So essentially what I'm going to talk about is more with respect to as finance people, as CFOs, as director of finance, as auditors. So I'm an internal auditor by profession. What are the typical challenges, or say what are the typical expectations which are increasing day by day from multiple stakeholders? So what is that as CFOs, as director of finance, or maybe as finance professionals, we need to look at differently with respect to internal controls and overall governance structure, and how data analytics, if properly used, can actually map well with the expectations which the various stakeholders have. Sorry. Just about us, BDO is a network of accounting firms. It's the world's fifth largest network of accounting firms, having presence in 148 countries across the globe, with 56,000 plus people across all the locations that we work out. Predominantly, these are the five service lines out of which we operate: audit and assurance. This is more of an attestation function. So the member firm for BDO in India is MZSK & Associates, which provides attestation services. Then we have a stream for tax services, which is both indirect and indirect tax, and also cross-border transactions. Forensic and risk management is what I look after with respect to internal audits, internal controls, technology reviews, and also forensics. We also have a wing for corporate finance and transactions, which is more about mergers, acquisitions, due diligence, so on and so forth. And we also have an outfit which provides global outsourcing solutions around accounting, payroll, financial modeling to our global customers. So just to set the context right in terms of, as I talked about the various stakeholders and their expectations which are ever increasing, as finance professionals, what is required out of us is to really have a very robust risk management system, and we can't look at a risk management framework or a risk management system in isolation. It has to go hand in hand with the overall governance structure or overall governance framework which an organization has put in place. So there has to be a mechanism where at an appropriate point of time, we are identifying the risk, we are kind of prioritizing the risk, we are getting into some kind of a developing a mitigation plans for those risks. And it all boils down to the expectations, which is largely coming from the stakeholders with respect to how do I create the stakeholders' value from all these practices which I built in an organization. More importantly, if I look at the key regulatory changes which have come in force by way of Companies Act 2013, which is also enforcing a lot of responsibilities, not only on the key managerial person in the organization, but also on the independent directors and the directors, and also the auditors per se, wherein they are required to kind of comment upon the adequacy of internal financial controls in an organization. And this is both at the design level and at the operating effectiveness level. So it is casting a lot of responsibility, a lot of work to be done with respect to giving the independent directors or maybe the board members that kind of an assurance that yes, we have the right internal controls framework in place, which in our view potentially cannot happen unless we have a very strong analytics framework supporting us to kind of go back to our boards and to the audit committee regarding the operating effectiveness of internal controls. We have seen in our experience in most of the audit committee meetings, the members or the board members have been straight away asking us as internal auditors that whether have you been able to identify any fraudulent transactions while you did an internal audit of a particular review or of a particular area. Now it's too difficult to say yes or no, because the objective of internal audit is not really to find frauds. But yes, if there were certain indicators or certain red flags which were there in the process while undertaking an internal audit of a particular review, those certainly need to get highlighted. There are questions by the audit committee members with respect to how the sampling has been considered. You know, on what basis have you actually considered the entire population, or have you just restricted your samples to 30 samples? And trust me, all these things, I mean, all these questions cannot be answered unless there is a strong enough analytics model which is used for performing audits. So analytics to us, I mean, to me particularly, I think it's not something only to do with the auditors. It's equally important for the finance professionals like all of us to kind of inbuilt analytics into our day-to-day operations. And I'll talk about in the subsequent slides, wherein the recently enacted control framework, which is COSO, which is generally most generally accepted framework, internal controls framework, also talks about aligning your internal audit framework or internal controls framework with the operational MIS or maybe the operational framework that you have. So to answer all the questions which emerge from the board members, from the audit committee members, so on and so forth, and also the way the internal audit as a profession has changed, there is a lot of tilt towards continuous auditing, which is more in terms of more spontaneous audit, which is more with respect to not only restricting ourselves only to a set of data or to a set of processes, but to the entire population person. And also to kind of share the results of the audits more spontaneously with the stakeholders for corrective actions on a timely manner. So gone are the days when the people would actually do an audit and the turnaround time of churning out a report would be, say, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. Because the boards expect the auditors to answer with respect to what is the current status of all these observations that you've reported. So I might have done an audit, for the period April to October, and I'm reporting to the audit committee maybe in the month of January. But the board members are more keen to know what is the current status of all those observations. So that's where there is a need to kind of move on to continuous auditing, which combines data, which combines analytics on a very regular basis. And also, both these processes are then supported through a technology-enabled process. So this is where there is a shift which is happening from a rule-based audit or a checklist audit or, I would say more of a RCM-based audit or risk and control-based audit to a more process-driven risk-based audit. Focus on covering entire universe used to be there. I mean, I have seen the days when the clients would expect us to cover all the areas at one go. You potentially just go out to a plant location, you look at procurement, you look at sales, without assessing what is really critical in the business. For example, if all my 90% of my sales are happening to my parent company, is sales really significant enough or risk enough for an internal auditor to be looking at? So that kind of a risk assessment is something which is very much happening. So that's where the focus is on risk-based audits. There is nowadays a lot of focus on the regulatory compliance and the fraud risk assessment, more importantly, control and transaction testing, and also data analytics, so which is where the focus on the entire population is. What I want to now talk about is a case study. It's a live case study wherein we have moved from a historical-based techniques of auditing, of doing internal audits, to more of a continuous auditing, which is more live, wherein the client gets to see the benefits on a real-time basis, wherein the clients are able to integrate the findings of our procedures with their day-to-day MIS, with their operational MIS. So here I'm talking about a client which has got some 20 manufacturing locations in India. This is a large UK-based group. The client has been working on ERP for a good number of years, and just key challenges which were there with us as well as with the auditees before we moved ahead with a continuous auditing framework. There was a high turnaround time because 20 plants to be audited, multiple teams to be sent across to all those plants, aggregation of all the reports and then presentation to the managing director and to the audit committee was taking too much of a time. So leading to high turnaround time. Summarization of audit findings was really a task because individual reports were running out of, say, on an average into 50 to 60 pages. So you can imagine the total volume of the reports which had to be kind of summarized and presented to the board or to the audit committee in 1 hour kind of a period. Poor visibility of the implementation status. Now this is something which the management, or I would say the board, was more interested in knowing. And risk assessment process was ad hoc with limited insights for coverage at the manufacturing locations. So what we've done, I mean, what we do is, this is a pictorial representation of how typically a continuous auditing works in a realistic scenario. So let's say the company is having a SAP, is working on a SAP, so there is a connector which extracts data from SAP in a live environment. The periodicity can be defined, it could be weekly, it can be monthly, it can be half yearly, whatever, XYZ. the data is stored with respect to the data which has been extracted from the server. The next step is in terms of setting out the logics or the queries. Now, this is where the internal auditors play the most significant role with respect to defining the control objectives, that what is that I want to achieve out of the data which I have. So what are the nature of exceptions that I should be looking at? So that's where the role of auditors get in terms of defining the rules, scripting or querying the data on a regular basis. This is more of a one-time effort. Once the exceptions are coming out from the system, this is more about validating the results, because as an auditor, I cannot just simply share the results with the auditees unless we have done some kind of a corroboration or some kind of a validation with the source data. So that's the three steps with respect to data logic and the query setting. And then finally, it's more of sharing the results on a real-time basis with the management. All this is more of an automated process, wherein at the back end, a data analytics tool like an ACL or IDEA works. And on the front end, it is well supported by NanoB. So there are some smart analytics or the smart dashboards which are there, which kind of gives look and feel of the exceptions. This is more of a few of the exceptions which can be turned around. For example, if I'm looking at my accounts payable as a process, I as an auditor would be more interested to know whether there have been instances of PO splitting, or say for example, payment splitting. So let's say if I have an authority limit to approve a purchase order up to 10 lakh of rupees in a day. So whether there have been instances wherein on a single day, two purchase orders have been created onto a single vendor with values less than 10 lakhs, or say 4,99,000 each, which potentially would have never come to me for approval and would have been approved by the people down the line. So any kind of those suspicious transactions is what we develop the scripts, or we develop the control objectives. Same could be with respect to my financial accounting, my journal entry posting, my subsidiary ledger, general ledger reconciliation could be one objective. Employee reimbursements, more importantly, that's where most of the frauds we have been seeing happening across most of the organizations with respect to how the claims have been made by the employees and all. So these are illustrative cases where the control objectives need to be built up. This is more of a one-time activity. And then once everything is done, this is a tool wherein all the exceptions are loaded on. So the clients get to see, the clients get to have a dedicated user ID and a password, wherein I can log on as a functional owner or a control owner. And I can actually look at what are the various control breakdowns in my particular process. So in fact, for this client of ours, wherein there are these 20 manufacturing locations, we now have monthly meetings with all the plant heads. If not physically, the plant heads log on to our VC and we log on to our tool, talking about what are the exceptions which are there for the previous month. And the tool provides some kind of a benchmarking with respect to four plants or two plants or similar nature of plants, wherein the managing director or maybe head of operations can actually ask or can actually challenge the functional owners or the plant owners that a particular efficiency can be achieved at one particular plant, or say certain control breakdowns have been brought down at a one particular plant. Why is that cannot happen at your particular plant location? So this is more in terms of more dynamic auditing, I would say. This is more intense auditing. Instead of giving a piece of paper to the auditees at the fag end of the year, this is more real time, more interactive. A lot of focus goes on remediation plans. A lot of focus goes on taking corrective actions. A lot of focus goes on doing that benchmarking across all these 20 locations. And 20 locations, it can very well be replicated to an organization which is just two plant locations, or maybe which doesn't have a plant location. So this model is actually replicated even to service organizations, wherein the audit findings are then benchmarked maybe quarter to quarter. So what were my exceptions in quarter one, whether the exceptions have come down or the exception levels or the error rates have gone up on a quarter to quarter. These are a few of the snapshots of the reports which come out as an exception, maybe with respect to, for example, material sent out to the job workers which has not come back, bypassing my excise rules, so on and so forth. And this is where the management is required to comment upon or take corrective actions on a real-time basis. What it has benefited both us as auditors and also the client is with respect to identification of the control breakdowns. Management, yes, they might have developed some customized reports or Z reports, for example, but in our experience, those reports are more business-centric. Those reports would never talk about control breakdowns. The objective of those reports are largely to fulfill the business objectives with respect to decision-making, but instances of duplicate payments being processed, instances of PO splitting happen, may not figure out as a Z report to be customized by the functional owners. It enhances and supplements the management information systems, yes, and this is a live case which I'm talking about, wherein the client is now using all these exception reports, integrating it with their existing MIS framework, and reporting into the parent company out there in UK. It helps in establishment of red flags and the fraudulent activities. Reduce expenses, and this is actually a fact wherein we have been able to manage our out-of-pocket expenses for this client because now there are no multiple visits happening to all those 20 locations. So there is a virtual data room which is created out of Gurgaon office where the corporate office of the client is. And the team goes to the plant locations only once a year, and that too when, let's say, 6 or 7 months of data would have been analyzed. So my team would actually know where the pain points are of the different plant locations. So one plant may be really doing very bad with respect to managing the sales returns. So that kind of a focus is inbuilt into the audit process. That kind of root cause analysis is performed when the team actually goes to the plant locations. It reduces audit turnaround time and brings in efficiency. So we have seen the audit efforts getting reduced between last year and this year to an extent of 20 to 25%. Which potentially needs to be passed on to the client with respect to the engagement fee being negotiated to that extent. And the audit exceptions are derived out of total population. So we are no more restricting ourselves to be looking at only 30 transactions or say 20 sample cases or say 40 purchase orders raised in a year. We are here now talking about the entire population. So there's a huge amount of comfort which goes to the board of directors at the parent company level as well as at the India management level, with respect to the comfort and the extent of population which has been considered for audits. Lastly, it also meets the requirements of internal financial controls, which again is a requirement of the Companies Act, and the underlying framework for adopting any IFC, adopting the IFC, which is COSO 2013 as a framework. It also meets a requirement of Principle 16 of COSO 2013. So this is what, and this is where I just wanted to share a few thoughts, in terms of a real life example where how data analytics can be used, or rather is being used, for effectively managing the governance structure in any organization and also supporting various components of the entire governance framework, be it a risk management, be it internal audits, be it continuous auditing, control self-assessment, so on and so forth. Happy to answer any of the questions or queries. Sure. Thank you very much. Thank you.